Miami Memoirs presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of Florida attorney Lewis M. Ress. Miami Memoirs uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. From multimillion-dollar land deals to the ghostly aftermath of an Everglades plane disaster via a prematurely deep-frozen cat, these tales feature a parade of unforgettable characters, all sharply observed by a storyteller with a very human empathy for ordinary and extraordinary individuals caught up in the law.
Lewis has just released a new book, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Fans of strange cases and wild tales will need no introduction to the author's brilliant and fast-paced storytelling, laced with salty evocations of the human carnival of the era and shot through with compassionate insight. From advising the heir to Colonel Sanders and falling out with Buddy Hackett to nighttime jogging with Vitas Gerulaitis, the stories keep on coming. Larry the charismatic Wheeler dealer needs to be rescued from yet another risky deal, and a bridge-playing mobster needs help to find his missing daughter. All this and more, along with sage advice against buying a lottery ticket you might win. Welcome to round two. And now, let's begin.
Hi everyone. Welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Lewis Ress. Today, we're going to be covering two stories about the IRS. So I'm guessing you had quite a few dealings with them, huh, Lewis?
I have. How are you this morning?
Doing great.
My dear Jeanette Garcia, my host.
Doing great, thank you. How about yourself?
Good. We're up to episode 54.
Episode 54.
It's all about the IRS. The IRS, that's very current.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to hear the latest thing is that they funded more money into IRS, and they're going to have 87 agents looking at your tax returns.
Oh, boy.
And the Republicans are trying to scare the average person because they funded IRS finally. The Republicans defunded IRS primarily to serve their very, very extremely wealthy clients.
Right.
So that IRS would not have the funds to do audits. So this is what it's about. It's two stories. And it's about my father, the first one. His name was Calman. So Cal, my father, was a scrupulously accurate bookkeeper. And he loved numbers. And he was really proud of his perfect scores in his calculus exams, which he had saved since his college days. He would stay up all night to make certain that his books balanced to the penny. He did his own bookkeeping, and he filed his own tax returns. And he was so scrupulously honest, he wouldn't dream of failing to report the smallest item. In those days, the banks didn't report any interest paid to the depositors, to IRS. It was days long before the computers, and they didn't have the equipment or the personnel to do it.
To handle it, yeah.
And that's one of the problems with IRS, equipment and personnel, and it still has to be up to date. And hardly anybody reported bank account income because they knew the banks weren't reporting it. But my father did.
And so even if he was paid in cash, he would still report that?
If he got paid in cash by a client, sometimes they pay you in cash.
Yeah.
All of it, he reported. He never took a penny.
He's very honest.
He never would deduct anything that might not be completely related to business. He didn't pay for New York City Broadway shows. He didn't pay for fancy restaurants. Our family treat was a Chinese meal on a Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could get 10 courses for $10.
Oh, wow. That's quite a deal.
Yeah, 10 people could share it. So our family had one used car, a Chevrolet, and the radio was added later. We didn't have a radio. So that would what would cause three IRS agents to appear at his office, his modest office, on a Monday morning at 9 o'clock with a subpoena? You know what a subpoena is now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows what a subpoena is. To examine his books and records and bank accounts and trust accounts and diaries and client files. And the head agent was named Carl Johnson. And his business card read, Carl Johnson, United States Treasury Agent, Criminal Fraud Division.
Oh boy, Criminal Fraud Division?
Yep. And my father was, his knees were knocking. He didn't know what was going on.
I'll see.
They set up a bridge table in a small glass brick-walled file room right across the hall from my father's office. My father had a one-room office. And they had their adding machines, and the three of them, they had the adding machines going for 8 hours. On Tuesday, it was the same. The adding machines went on all day. They stopped for coffee and for lunch, and they left at 4 in the afternoon. On Wednesday, One of the investigators left at 10 in the morning, and on Thursday, the second investigator left early. On Friday at about 11 in the morning, Carl Johnson sat down at my father's desk. He said, "Mr. Ress, we're all done. We couldn't find a thing wrong. We never have seen such a complete and clean set of books and records. I'll be leaving now. You have nothing to worry about."
And how did your father react to that?
My father hadn't slept for four nights, and he was emotionally drained. And he looked at Mr. Johnson. He said, "Mr. Johnson, I'm a wreck. Would you do me the honor of having a cup of coffee with me or a sandwich? It's almost 12 o'clock. Let's go downstairs to the Concord cafeteria and tell me what's going on here." Well, the Concord was a noisy cafeteria downstairs in the building, crowded with terrazzo floors and plastic trays. You've seen those big cafeterias.
Yeah.
industrial type, you know. And they sat down opposite one another, nibbling on sandwiches and sipping coffee. They each paid for their own food.
Well, it was a good idea to take that break, right?
Yeah, well.
And break some bread.
It was. And my father said, "Mr. Johnson, what is this all about?" Mr. Johnson said, "Mr. Ress, we were told that you were the attorney for the mafia and that you laundered hundreds of thousands of dollars for the mob. In those days, that was like hundreds of millions."
Oh, my gosh.
My father said, "What? Who would tell you such a lie? Mr. Ress, you know that we're not at liberty to disclose any of our confidential sources." My father said, "Does an informant get a percentage of anything you find?" And Mr. Johnson said, "Yes, it's general knowledge that we pay a percentage of what we recover." "Who did this to me? You see I am honest and professionally responsible, so this had to be a vicious attempt to injure me. You've got to tell me who did this."
And did they end up telling him?
"No," he said, "Mr. Riss, I'm extremely upset that my team spent a week on a totally false accusation. I have never seen more honest and accurate books and records. We made a number of telephone calls and cross-checked many records to verify everything shown in your books and your tax returns, and they checked out perfectly. You enjoy a sterling reputation, and you have been badly wronged. I would like to tell you who it was, but I..." My father said, "Mr. Johnson, you know that my word of honor is my life. I am extremely worried about my family's safety. Anyone who could do this to me has got to be a threat to my family. I promise you on my word of honor that I will not tell any other person who did this, so long as the informant is alive. You have my word of honor." Mr. Johnson looked at my father and he said, "Okay, Mr. Ress, I know how you feel, and I believe you. The informant is your sister-in-law, Sid. Now keep your word."
Wow, his own sister-in-law? That's terrible.
My father came home that night a torn person. He had never liked his wife's sister. She was wacky and been in and out of mental institutions. She was sloppy. Her hair was wild. She was overweight, and some of her teeth were missing, leaving black gaps in her mouth. She was poor, and she hung out at her house. She used to take food home, clothes, and some money twice a week. She often sat at our dinner table. But he kept his word, and my aunt continued to keep coming to the house. My mother never learned about her sister, ever. My dad never let on that he knew, and my dad told me after my Aunt Sid died.
Wow, that's some story, Lewis. And to keep that secret for so long, you know, keep it
inside. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk about it later.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another great IRS story that I want to tell you about.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it, Lewis.
Well, this one is called A Visit from IRS, and this involves me.
Oh, boy. Okay. Here we go.
You know, IRS hasn't audited me in well over 30 years. It goes back to a visit I had in 1991 when a very formal lady appeared unannounced in my office one afternoon with a large briefcase and proper ID asking to meet with me. She was young and in her late 20s, fairly well-dressed and very formal. She was an Afro-American lady. She was not smiling. Her voice was clipped. She meant business. I was clearly the target.
And what did she say?
She said, "Well, I'm an internal revenue agent, and I'm here to audit your entertainment expenses for 1990. I wasn't very concerned. I responded, "I have yellow sheets of legal paper itemizing by the month each expense and showing the business to which it was related. I believe you will find everything in order. Feel free to use the library and just ask if you require anything."
Did she smile at all?
Oh, no. She gave me a mean look. I was even afraid to offer her a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, off she went with my yellow sheets into the library. I had made copies before handing them over to her. I thought that this would be a short review and that would end the matter in an hour or so. After 2 hours, Miss Collins reappears. Mm. And she was agitated, and she lectured me. She said, "Your records are grossly inadequate. I require the actual receipts for each item of entertainment. There are 4 items of a significant amount with multiple names. I will require proof that your clients were present and that their business was discussed. Otherwise, the deductions will be disallowed, and there will be interest and penalties on all disallowed items."
Wow. You had a problem there, huh?
You bet I had a problem there. It was going to be a big contest. She wanted my scalp on her belt, and it was game on. Out came the actual receipts for the year. The stack was about a foot high. She gaped. She gasped. "Score one for me." She said, "I'm not going through all of that." She stammered. She said, "You get it in order and have it delivered to my office along with the proof that I require."
Yeah, that's a big job, huh?
You bet it was a big job.
And were you able to get everything together?
Well, when she was gone, it was clear that this would not be a pleasant experience. IRS was after me, and she was an angry lady.
Mm-hmm.
It took me about a week working at odd hours. I went through each item and photocopied it along with the name of the client who was entertained, the file number of the case, and the nature of the case. The receipts were organized by the month, and the cover divider pages for each month were inserted into the index. An outline or an index with the total monthly expenses and a final expense summary was prepared. My client signed affidavits confirming the date and nature of their entertainment and that they had discussed their legal business with me, and these were placed in the binders. It was over 100 pages in 2 volumes with a clear plastic cover.
What did you do next?
Well, the IRS office was on the 2nd floor of the Jefferson National Bank building, just off Route 441 in North Dade, North Miami, and it was a bad neighborhood.
Mm.
I personally delivered the project to a scowling Miss Collins, who was very clearly unhappy and not pleased to receipt for it. She said, "I'm not going to have time to read all of this. I just don't have any more time. Just leave it and we'll be back in touch with you." She stomped out and I was left alone. Maybe this was a good time to call my accountant.
And what did your accountant say?
Well, my accountant said, "Lewis, they're calling you in and you better pay something or they're going to find some other problem with your tax return. It's best that I go to any meetings with you. Don't be contentious. Give them what they want."
And what next?
Well, it was 2 weeks and then the letter from IRS arrived, setting the date and time for a conference at their office. I'll abbreviate and clean up the old story. It's a joke. The client calls his accountant and says, "How do I dress for this conference? Like a poor slob in old clothes, unshaven, or maybe a power play in a designer suit with cufflinks?" The accountant finally tells the client, "It's like a young lady on a date with a rapist. It doesn't matter what you wear, you're going to get screwed."
Oh, yeah. Did the day finally arrive?
Oh, yeah, it did. Into the lion's den we went. The IRS lady was there with the 2-volume, 100-page indexed entertainment receipt document in front of her. She nodded when I introduced Wendell Nichols, my accountant, who was a mild-mannered, easygoing, refined, and as gentlemanly as one could be. She glared at us. "I've reviewed these receipts and affidavits carefully, and I've denied 60% of them because they do not add up correctly. You owe..." "Hold up a minute," said my accountant. "Please, exactly what doesn't add up? The amount you deducted is not the same as the amount in the receipt. Please show me what you're talking about. Look here, you deducted $121 in this item, and the receipt is only for $120. "Miss Collins, let me explain," I said. "The $1 difference is where there is no self-parking, and I have to pay the parking attendant in cash." She said, "You owe IRS $4,322, which in those days you can multiply by 10.
Uh-huh.
My accountant said, "Mr. Nichols," he said, "would you compute the claim again, giving my client the benefit of those $1 or $2 items that you disallowed?" Miss Collins leaves the room and comes back in. After about 5-10 minutes, she said, "I spoke to my supervisor. We've spent a great deal of time on this case. We will actually lose money if you figure out the hours involved. We will accept $750, and if you're not satisfied with that, you may speak to her directly. She's in the next room.
Oh.
Wow. If you could envisage what Miss Collins would look like in the next 20 years, that is what we saw sitting at her desk in the adjacent room. The elbow jab was jolting. It got me right in the rib cage. It was my accountant, Wendell Nichols, whispering in my ear, "Lewis, shut up and say thank you and let's get out of here before they start looking at anything else." "We accept the $750, said my accountant. "May I ask you a question off the record?" It was Miss Collins. She was asking me a question. She said, how come you make so much money and I make so little?"
She actually said that to you?
Yep, I couldn't believe it. That could be the end of the story, but it wasn't. It suddenly came to me, of course. I'm white, I'm wealthy, I'm highly educated, and I'm an alpha male.
Huh. And what did you say?
I said, "You know, that's a fair question. This country is great. Opportunity surrounds us. How far have you been in school? 1 year left to complete college? Well, finish up, even if it means going at night. Then go to law school at night. It will take about 5 years. And then you'll have to study on weekends and even on lunch hours. But it'll be worth it. Then take the bar exam, and your first job will pay about one-third of what you're now making. You'll have to live on it and pay back the school loans. Give it your best. Come in early. Leave late. Work weekends and holidays. Neglect your family and entertain your clients at night. Keep your employees happy. Provide for their health insurance and their retirements. And that's not all. Forget the 40-hour work week. Forever. You'll never have a 40-hour week. I've been doing this for over 35 years, and I can tell you that I believe you have the fortitude to do it too, and I wish you success."
And what happened next? What did she have to say to that?
I put my arms around her, and I gave her a big kiss on the cheek and a hug. My account almost dropped dead. I really meant it. That hug came from the heart. It was the first time I understood her. It's a terribly tilted playing field.
It sure is.
Since that encounter with her, one of my greatest joys has been helping Afro-American ladies get through college and sometimes even law school.
Hmm. And then so what happened?
Always a sequel. Seems to be a sequel. It wasn't more than 2 weeks later that a gentleman appeared at my office, and he handed me his card and he said, "I'm John Thompson, and I am an IRS agent, and I'm here to go over your entertainment deductions for the year 1989.
Oh, no, not again.
Yep, it could end here, but it doesn't. I smiled at him and I said, "Oh, Mr. Thompson, am I glad to see you. Please have a cup of coffee with me. I've just completed an audit with your Miss Collins for 1990, and I want to share the material that I prepared for her with you. Just enjoy your coffee. I'll be right back." And back I came with the 120-page plastic-covered indexed two-volume project.
Oh, wow.
And I slid it across the table to Mr. Thompson, and I said, "I'll be very glad to prepare the exact same documentation for 1989 for you."
And what did he say to that?
He looked at me, he said, "Sir, I'm really quite busy now. You are approved for 1989. And with that, Mr. Thompson went out the door, and I have not heard from IRS for well over 30 years.
Oh, wow. Well, great story, Lewis. And how did the IRS come up with the $750?
I think they figured out the time they spent to review the documents and put that number on it.
I see. Okay. And does the IRS consider the expenses that they get in doing a tax return?
Yes, they have to acquire? That's the whole point. They do. Mm-hmm. So that when you get an audit, if it's just for a small amount and they lose money, they're not happy about it.
Right. Yeah, it's a loss on their end.
So let's talk about IRS, all right?
Let's talk about it.
Red hot subject.
Mm-hmm.
Really is. Just turned out to be. One of the things that people don't realize is that when you fund IRS, it helps you too, because it's taken a long time for people to get their tax returns processed and to get their refunds.
Mm.
Sometimes it takes 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Now they're going to use a lot of that money for equipment to process the tax returns and the refunds faster. They don't tell you this on the TV ads that the opposite party took. The Democrats got the funding for the IRS, and the Republicans didn't want it.
Hmm.
And you would think just the opposite, because they want to balance the budget, and IRS collects the money and balances helps balance the budget. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very good that the IRS got funded.
Oh, good.
And they'll be able to, their equipment is all outdated.
Mm,
and they don't have scanners. And now they'll be able to acquire scanners and some more people. And then only a small percentage, I figured out about 6% if those of the rich people with big returns get audited.
Hmm.
And it should be a little higher.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So
definitely.
There were actually $21.3 million unprocessed tax returns as of June 1st, 2022.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, and you often wait 10 months. 90% of all of the tax returns are filed electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And about 17 million send their in paper filings.
Hmm.
So IRS is hiring more and more employees now. Actually, IRS, you know the history of IRS, what it was?
No, not too well, nope.
Well, you know, taxation is a major governmental function and historical.
Yeah, yeah.
So the country started off with resentment to the stamp tax.
Okay.
And the tea tax.
Mm-hmm.
And this was England asserting its political power. George III was angry with the colonies, and it was a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
These were not income taxes or taxes to support the troops, the way the English government said they were. They were penalties.
I see. Yeah.
And so it created
the Boston
reaction.
Tea Party, right, and all that.
What?
You had the Boston Tea Party.
And... Yeah, well, that's what it was, an adverse reaction, mm-hmm. and it was really a group of protesters.
Hmm.
And then, of course, in 1862, it went back to they needed money for the Civil War, and so they had a tax that lasted 10 years, and then it was repealed.
Mm. Okay.
Then in 1794... they had the Whiskey Rebellion. You know what that was?
Nope.
Well, we love our booze in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And so they put a tax on the distillers. The government needed money to pay back the debt for the Civil War for the Revolution. And the distillers refused to pay the tax. So they had, George Washington led a group of soldiers horseback stopped that rebellion. They were very, they killed a few people.
Oh, wow.
Then there was the War of 1812, and they put on a sugar tax. Actually, it was like these taxes were on the excesses of society, jewelry, sugar. They taxed carriages, like the same as automobiles.
Right.
And alcoholic beverages, and they use that to pay for the War of 1812. Then they repealed the taxes in 1817, and they abolished the position of Commissioner of Revenue because there was always a reaction to it. In 1870, they made the tax files and the lists of taxpayers private, confidential, because they were getting out and people were being singled out for having paying a lot of money into taxes. They were the rich people. You could find out who they were.
Mm. Yeah.
So when was the first income tax? Do you know?
No idea.
It was in 1913, and it was not popular at all.
I'm sure, right?
And then in 1914, they invented the 1040 form.
Okay.
So now we have the same 1040. And then in the 1930s, they created the concept of pay as you go.
Okay.
I remember that. And that was part of the Roosevelt administration, the Democrats. And you had, as you earned the income, it was deducted from your paycheck. And the government didn't have to wait till the end of the year to get its money.
Yeah, that's
which was very, very good for the government. In 1948, IRS started to use punch cards. So they were right with it because that's when IBM started the punch cards.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first computers in business. Then in 1949, they purchased electric typewriters. That was very big because everything had to be done by hand and the typewriters with carbon paper and everything. But the electric typewriters were much faster. Then in 1953, the Bureau of Internal Revenue became the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay.
And that was the IRS. And then they went into 1986, they went into electronics. And in 2016, they had online accounts. And so now we are we're back in the use of the IRS for political purposes. So it was used for political purposes,
right? Yeah.
And they couldn't get, I remember, who Al Capone.
Ha! Yes.
So Al Capone was a criminal out of Chicago, and he was a bootlegger and he was a killer, and they couldn't get him. But they went backwards, and this is one of IRS's techniques.
Huh.
They see your lifestyle, and they add up what it costs you to live, and they look for that income. And if that income doesn't show up on your tax return, they go after you for fraud. So they went after Al Capone on his books and records for tax fraud, and that's what they convicted him on.
Right,
and he went to jail for that, and not for committing all the crimes he committed.
Yeah, they couldn't get him for that, but they got him for
IRS violations. So now you have the recent thing of James Comey and Andrew McCabe. Are you familiar with that?
No, no. Tell me.
Well, James Comey was the head of the FBI under Trump, and his deputy, who was in the Department of Justice, was Andrew McCabe. It turns out that they both got on the very bad side of the then president, who you know, was Donald Trump. And he evidently did not inhibit them from being investigated by IRS. So here, the two highest FBI agents, who were both detested by Trump, both faced intensive IRS audits. Well, do you know what, for their 2017 taxes? Nobody knows what taxes they were investigated for, but I do.
And, oh, okay.
It was a rare and intensive audit. IRS does not do many of those. Only if they have a belief that there's some kind of impropriety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
they had a strong reason.
How often does that audit take place? You know how often?
No.
One in 30,600 tax returns.
Wow.
And to audit the two of them at the same time, that was a coincidence like being struck by lightning and winning the lottery. It's highly, highly improbable that that was just coincidental. Comey's audit, James Comey's audit, lasted for over a year.
Wow.
And he had to hire an accountant the way I did to get through IRS. And he cost him $5,000 for his accountant to go to all these meetings and find the documents that they were asking for. And
that's
at the end,
work.
At the end, he received a $347 refund. So,
wow.
It was a wasteful investigation, and it had a distinct stench to it,
yeah,
an odor. that persists. And people just wipe these things out of their mind. If it's not them, if it's not you, you forget about what happened to Mr. Comey. Mm-hmm. But I was never a big fan of his because he was the one that caused Hillary Clinton to lose the election, in my opinion, mm-hmm. by saying that she was under investigation for dealings with a foreign government.
Oh, yeah, that'll do
just
it.
Just before the election when Trump beat her. I think that may have tipped the scales.
Oh, yeah.
So
definitely.
He was not one of my favorite people, but that doesn't mean that he should be punished.
Yeah, if he did everything correctly.
We're all supposedly Americans and mm-hmm. treated equally. Anyhow, Andrew McCabe received a owed a small amount to the government, very small. Hmm. It wasn't worth going after him.
Okay.
So that's the story of Comey and McCabe. And you see that the budget restraints reduced the number of audits. This really used to be 16% of the rich used to get over $5 million in income would get audited. Hmm. And then it went down to 2%.
Hmm. Wow.
And now it's going to go back. It's going to come back.
Yeah. So, what do you think we're going to, what percentage do you think we're going to be at?
I think it's going to go back to 16%.
Yeah?
Yes, I do. Now we're going to talk about the disappearance of IRS emails.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Let's hear about it.
They had the same problem like the Secret Service. They had a history of doing this. I think it was Lois Lerner. They were charged with going after Republican-centered institutions that were seeking a tax-free charitable status. Hmm. If you have a charity with IRS, you have two levels. One, you form the charity, hmm. and it comes in as a corporation. Mm-hmm. And two, it gets tax exemption because it's certified as charitable.
Like nonprofit.
The second is a separate procedure, separate state, separate stage. And there were a number of organizations that sounded political. There was an attempt by IRS to stop them from being certified as tax-free level charity. Hmm. And there was a reason for it. Lois Lerner was in charge of that. She was in charge of Director of Exemption Organizations Division. Hmm. And these were organizations that were exempt from taxes. Mm-hmm. She was looking at entities like the Tea Party, mm-hmm. Anything that had a name Patriot on it.
Yeah.
And there were 296 applications filed to seek tax exempt status. They issued what they call BOLO, the IRS.
What does that
BOLO
stand for?
Is be on the lookout for. So out of the 296 applications, I can only find four that were approved. I did some research. Hmm. So there really was some kind of a basis for the claim that they were singled out for critical review. Lois Lerner was, they went after her, and she said she lost all of her emails, that her computer crashed.
Oh.
And she wouldn't give them her emails. And Steve Miller, who was head of the IRS at the time, was forced to resign.
Oh, wow.
And this was a big scandal. Nobody knows about it. Okay,
yep,
there were 54,000 emails ultimately delivered to the House Oversight Committee that were recovered. But she said they were lost originally.
Hmm.
And the House and Ways House Ways and Means Committee was looked into it, and they held her in contempt of Congress, but they never did anything about it. They refused to go after Lerner, Lois Lerner, and she resigned finally. They did a 2-year investigation, and they found poor judgment, institutional inertia, but no crimes. And it was liberal-leaning groups may have been subject to extra security also when they sought to try to get tax exemption status.
Hmm.
Okay, so it's political.
Yeah.
And so that's IRS. I think that gives you a history of what they have been through and where they're heading.
Definitely, yeah. A look into the past and where we're going in the future. Well, thank you so much, Lewis. I learned quite a lot. I did not have much knowledge about the IRS. So thank you so much for your stories and for all that information. Until next time.
My great pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks.
And I hope I don't get audited after this.
Hopefully not. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. We are excited to announce that Lewis now has his own blog. Visit lewisrez.com. To get insightful commentary to the Miami Memoirs podcasts, along with an analysis of current events, as only Lewis can provide.